always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting faith with life.
Happy Easter Monday. Thank you for tuning in to Connecting Faith. So glad to have you part of the broadcast today. We always appreciate the opportunity to connect with you and to talk about connecting faith to life. And here on this Monday after Easter, it seems appropriate that we would talk a little bit about life change and transformation, because that is really why we celebrate Easter, isn't it? Because Jesus came to offer us life, and life to the full, and hope for eternity. And we have a great redemptive story that we're going to get to today. Want to invite you to listen in and also talk about some new resources that are just available. In fact, I think I might start with my good friend Steve Johnson. Steve, we have three guests in the studio today, but Steve, actually, if you go to our website, myfaithradio.com, and click on the Get to Know Us link. Is that what it is? Get to Know Us, where the video is? You'll see the video with...
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, Steve is a media producer, video producer, and did that work for us. So thanks again for doing that, by the way.
It was my pleasure.
And so when you're not doing your day job, doing video production for sports and things, you have a ministry, part of a ministry team, right, called Five Stone Media.
Five Stone Media, which was created specifically to tell the story of your guest today, John Turnipseed, started just about 8 years ago or so. It was myself and four other guys here in the Twin City area, and Five Stone Media seemed like an appropriate name. It's David slaying Goliath, and did it with one stone, and there's five of us, and we can always say we're one of the stones.
Sure.
You know, and so it was a nonprofit film and video production company.
And you met John at an event, right, and just got captivated by his story.
I met John at a Heart of a Warrior Advance, which is Dr. Greg Borgon, and that was 8 years ago, and John was there as part of a group from Urban Ventures in the Twin Cities. This was in Wisconsin, and somebody asked John to just get up around the campfire and share a little bit of his story, and his exact words were, "My name is John Turnipseed. It's Dutch, and I'm not. I have 30 members of my family in prison, 10 for first-degree murder. And I'm here with my son, and we're sleeping under the same roof tonight for the first time. And I don't remember the years you said, but it was 20 or 25 years or something like that." Mm-hmm. And that captivated me. Mm-hmm. Something grabbed me. And being the video storyteller that I am at times, I said, somebody's got to tell his story. Sure. So I went and grabbed four other guys. I said, we've got to do this. And we were just going to do a short little video to give to John as kind of a tool in his ministry. And it's just turned out to be a lot more than that.
And in fact, tomorrow, right, the third one comes out, right?
There's three short films about different chapters of John's life. The third one is coming out tomorrow, or we're getting it tomorrow. It'll be released shortly. And then there's a book, and there's a video curriculum project that we're just finishing up too. So it's turned out to be quite the project.
Yeah. Well, we'll let you come back in and give details about where to find that later on, but we're going to hear the story first. And by the way, I should mention John Turnipseed in the studio, and we're going to discover more about his life. I want to just welcome Art Erickson as well. Art, a longtime friend, Air of Faith Radio. Good to see you again. Thank you.
Good to be here, Neil.
Art, founder of Urban Ventures. Urban Ventures, we'll find out, is part of the story of John Turnipseed. But John spent his childhood battling demons brought on by a number of things, and in fact, I think in our promo we talked about, lacking conscience in a number of things, that you were officially a bad dude.
Yeah, I guess, among other things, I'm thinking of the terms that prosecutors and judges would use. Bad, that would be a nice thing that they use. Juvenile delinquent, sort of career criminal, words like that, I'm very used to hearing.
Tell me a little bit about childhood, because I think, as I recall, I mean, you moved to Minneapolis after what, growing up in the South, right? Alabama, was it?
Or, yeah, yeah, I was 7 years old, I think, when I came up here. It was 1960. I was born in 54, and I came up here in 1960, 61, out of a very healthy environment with mom and dad married, going to church all the time. I was going to be a minister. Everything was real good. Never knew what hunger was, because I grew up on a farm, and farm, church, and family. That's all I knew until I came up here.
Well, something changed, huh?
Yeah, something changed. The man I knew as my father was not the same person when I got up here. He used to be a deacon in the church and the head of the church choir. They used to practice at the house and raise chickens in the kitchen. And just to me, just a wonderful childhood. And I was the firstborn, so I was with him all the time, picked cotton with him, all kinds of stuff. And I just knew he loved me, and he loved my mother. And when I came up here, he was an alcoholic, and he cursed, and he was violent. I couldn't believe it. He had turned into the boogeyman or the Tasmanian devil, or, you know, things of that I just couldn't. It scared me to death who he was now.
Brothers and sisters, you said you're the oldest, so you have a number of brothers?
Five brothers and a sister.
Okay. So things were going downhill. You mentioned you never knew hunger before. Apparently hunger is part of the story. Just sort of
I came up here, and my father had us get on welfare, because that was a way that you could have the state pay your rent and things of that nature, and welfare meat. I remember potted meat that, you know, sort of like this big lump of Spam that we hated, because it would mess in a school lunch bag, those brown bags, it would leak through. And it smelled pretty bad, and all the kids knew that you had a welfare sandwich. And going to school with this little bald head and a bowl haircut and a southern accent and weighing probably about 50 pounds and 8, 9 years old with a southern drawl, it wasn't a nice experience. Playground was dreadful, because kids would make fun of me and make me say my name or say something so that they could laugh, and if I didn't, they would slap me upside the head. Girls would take turns beating me up. You know, it was really just a horrible existence. And, you know, and home wasn't any better, because my father, with his drunkenness now, was beating my mother every night. So, and I had to stay up every night to try to protect her by sitting in her lap and hanging onto her neck until he could pry me apart. So that was a daily routine for me. And weekends were worse, because my father was there more of the time, and anytime he got drunk, he was violent. And it never hit me, never once in my life, but he hitting my mother was probably worse for me, you know, and that's who he was.
Your story is not atypical, I suppose, for many that are new to an area or come with, you know, with an accent or something different, mm-hmm. you know, and then difficult home. So where did you find sort of encouragement? You've grown up in the church, right?
I grew up in the church, and all of a sudden we came up here, and it seems like the church turned their back on us, you know, because the minister at the time knew what was going on and didn't do anything about it. The whole church scene, my mother stopped sending us to church because she'd have a black eye, broken arm, whatever. And so I just started to dislike the church people, dislike what it stood for, because I felt I knew they knew, and I knew that they were supposed to do something, because this God that they talked about all the time would not let this happen. And why don't they just ask him to stop? And they never even asked him to stop. And they would come by our house and act like everything was okay, and they knew it wasn't okay. I wanted them to stay there. Because when they were around, my dad didn't hit my mom, but they would leave and leave us there, you know, and we couldn't say anything. So it was like these hypocrites walking into my house. That's a big word I can use now, but back then, you know, that's how I looked at them. These are two-faced people. I don't like them. You know, they know what's happening. And I wanted to, even in my eyes, I would try to cry out to them, and they didn't respond, because I couldn't say anything. That was taboo. You couldn't say anything to these good church people. So So that church thing, as soon as I didn't have to go, I really never went back. I just said, okay, that's great. And I really dislike church people, ministers especially. Deacons, they were on the list too. Yeah.
We're going to hear more of the story because John found community in a different way, in the form of gangs, and became a pimp and a drug dealer and much more. In fact, his story is powerfully told. In fact, there's a new book that's in the making called Lifeblood, a true story about John's life. There's also a trilogy of short films and a 9-part video curriculum series as we hear more about the life of John Turnipseed. And we're going to do that in just a moment. Invite you to stay tuned. And it may be that you have a question or comment, or maybe just want to just say hey to John. If you know his story, you've been impacted by his life story, you're welcome to call us at 877-933-2484. 877-93-FAITH. We'll continue in just a minute.
There's no shortage of messages in your life. Phone calls, text messages, face-to-face requests.
Mom.
But in the midst of your daily communication overload, find messages that build your faith and encourage your walk with God. Compelling stories, insightful podcasts, and ways to get involved. Get the latest from Faith Radio in your Facebook newsfeed when you join us on our Facebook page. Just search My Faith Radio on Facebook.com to join us today.
Hi, this is Chip Ingram from Living on the Edge. We are so pleased to be a part of the daily programming on Faith Radio. I'm thankful that the team at Faith Radio is committed to wholeheartedly pursuing Christ and sees the value of relevant Bible teaching. Would you join with us? Would you please consider sending a generous gift today? Just call 1-877-933-2484. And thanks so much.
Listening to Connecting Faith on this day after Easter. We're going to talk a little bit about life transformation in a pretty dramatic way as John Turnipseed joins us today. John is a former gang leader, pimp, drug dealer, now directs the Fathering Center at Urban Ventures, and it's a nonprofit set in the heart of the same Minneapolis gang territory that John and his family terrorized. We're going to hear more of his story in a moment. Also with us today, Art Erickson, who's founder of Urban Ventures, and Steve Johnson from Five Stone Media, who has produced the videos of John's story and just some of those just coming out. We'll talk more about that. In fact, I have a couple of little clips that we're going to play from that as we go along. But, John, let's talk about your story. You're a young boy. Family life is awful. Church not helping. Talk about the kind of the downward spiral. Was there a point where you said, you know, I'm just going to get into a gang? I mean, was there a group that actually welcomed you in, or did you start one?
Well, it really started, you know, with my the home violence and everything that was going on, and sort of being isolated from the regular community, and I'm belonging to a church community that wouldn't, you know, really hear. And there were other church communities that might have helped, you know, and Art belonged to one in particular, if we could have told them. You know, but we really could not tell them because they would possibly do something about what was going on in my house. So there was this conflict in my mind. So I'm growing up and I'm sort of stuck in the middle of everything. And because I'm stuck in the middle and there is no God, I sort of became God. I became my little brother's big brother, God, everything. I fed him. I stole to take care of him. And a cousin of mine came up from another state, from Chicago, and taught me how to violently take care of my family and how to financially, illegally, though, take care of my family. Both of those things I was a great student of and became really good at taking care of my family. I started going to jail at a young age. I started hurting people at a young age so quickly that kid that was on the playground getting beat up and slapped around went away when that happened. And I relished the fact that kids were scared of me and used that. I became sort of the beast of the playground then, you know, when I chose to go to school, because now I was disrespecting my mother because I was 13, 14. She couldn't tell me anything. I did what I wanted to do, and my father was a little leery of me, and I, you know, hated his guts. And so he just sort of just, you know, further stayed away from me because I was angry at him. So I was growing up, and I had a bunch of friends that surrounded me, and for some reason they would always listen to me. If I said, you know, let's get out of, let's just leave, they would leave. If I decided if we wanted to rob the store, we just robbed the store. And sometimes I took the whole weight if we got caught. I became somehow the leader of this group of four or five guys. And I caught the attention of older guys. I caught the attention of the Black Stone Rangers, a young man that's passed away now named Earthiel, who was a very agitant militant in the community, and got me into things like learning how to shoot rifles, and wanted me to actually kill police officers and stuff. I remember that, and getting us high. And that's the people like that start coming into my life, older guys that knew I would shoot a gun and knew that they could just get me high. And I needed an older man to please. I have always needed that in my life. And they took advantage of that and almost got me into some things I never would have gotten out of. Had my first child at 16, and I, you know, on that day, my child came into this life through being shot. I was shot. My child was shot, and the mother of my child was shot by a guy that was mad at me, trying to kill me. And luckily, everybody lived, but that just opened up my life, and I started welcoming in gang members from other states that needed someone. That was Minnesota. I was a Minnesota guy, and I already carried a gun, and I already involved in some very violent things, so, and very popular. So the gangs that tried to form in South Minneapolis would approach me, and most of them might ask a simple question, can I run it? And they'd say, no. And I'd say, well, no. And so our family was sort of forming. We were a gang in ourselves. They called us the Crash Crew at first, me and my brothers were very violent, and my friends. And pretty soon it just, I was approached by a major gang out of Chicago, and ended up not running that gang then, having a lot of influence in it. And when I went to prison at 18, that's when I made my first formal gang called the Black Brotherhood Cultural Development Organization. I know that's a mouthful, but that's when I first officially had my own large gang with 80 members, and that's how it started.
You've lived a lot of life by the time you're 18. Huh?
Yes, lived a lot of life. Had been in a lot of jails and stuff. And around this time, you know, the community I lived in was not supportive of gang stuff. You know, it wasn't like we were welcomed in there and stuff. A lot of the kids were school kids, so we really stuck out. That's when I first sort of got whiff of Art and his ministry, and I knew what it was, and I trusted them to the point that I knew that if I got involved with them, I couldn't do the things I wanted to do now. Now I'm into wanting to do bad things and not wanting anything to do even with good church people, you know, and Art belongs to that good church people thing. So, and it was okay that they helped my family. I just didn't want any help from them, so I stayed away from them, but they... When I would go to jail, they relied heavily upon the good nature of Art and people in that neighborhood that were Christian. They actually helped my family and took care of them.
Because otherwise, you've got power and influence and money and all those things, right? I mean, everything you were kind of looking for, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And there was always this conflict in me. I'm a church boy. So there was something I always knew that I was doing wrong. I didn't know that. So I had to put my conscience to sleep. And you can do that. If you do wrong long enough and surround yourself with people that support the wrongdoings, you can put your conscience to sleep. And you got to keep it sleep, though. You got to keep it medicated. You got to keep feeding it. You got to keep doing things that are over the line. It pushes your conscience further and further away till you wake up one day and you absolutely don't even have one. You know, you have vague memories of where it used to be, but it's gone. And that allows you to shoot somebody in the face today and have dinner with them tomorrow if they lived. You know, it just didn't matter.
You were, the violence part of it, the anger part of it, that just fueled it too, didn't it? I guess you needed that to keep going, right?
Oh, absolutely. The anger was a way of expressing how mad I was inside. The outside anger, I almost killed a teacher of mine in the county homeschool because she made a joke about my name. And it surprised her because she didn't see it coming because there was no reason for this amount of anger. But she didn't know that the tornado that lied within me, you know, was so angry. And I didn't care. If it wasn't for a couple of guys in the class, I would have killed her without even thinking. You know, now I'm glad it didn't happen. And I talked to that teacher a couple of years ago, and she's forgiven me. But, you know, and I explained to her what was going on in my life, you know, and but that's who I was. I was very volatile and not caring what happened to me because I was already living in hell. And I finally stopped my father from hitting my mother. I almost shot. I was going to shoot him, and he knew I would. And he agreed to stop hitting my mother and stop hitting her. And that didn't change my life, though. You know, actually, I was just crazy with crimes and every waking minute of my time I spent figuring out how to make illegal money, and even pimping and whatever, it was a part of my lifestyle. And my first wife was actually my first prostitute that I had. And, you know, it was a very dark time in my life.
Your family, 30 of your extended family in prison?
Yes.
So you took others with you, didn't you?
I took others with me. I have a rolling nightmare, I call it. It's sort of the pictures of my family. I have a grandson doing life without the possibility of parole who used to idolize me. You know, it's like, okay, now he wants me to help him because he knows that in my own way I had something to do with that. You know, I know that I led his father wrong. And who led him wrong? Instead of raising children, I raised criminals. And those criminals acted on that belief system. And now I've got 3 grandsons, right? Matter of fact, right now in jail. I've got, like I said, there's over 10 family members in jail for murder right now. And it just keeps growing. It's touching other generations. And just a legacy of just evil and bad behavior and stuff has surrounded my family, and I was a large part to do with that because I was the first turnip seed. My dad was the first turnip seed to ever get in trouble in Minnesota. I was the second. And that bore the legacy of being shot, going to prison, abandoning your kids, and just, you know, living a fast life, dying soon, getting shot, stabbed, you know, stabbing and shooting other people. It's just crazy. And we all knew, though, that God was real. There's no escaping that, and I'm glad that I knew that from birth because that allowed me to reach out in later on in life when I turned 40 to art to help me. You know, when I actually wanted God to come into my life and didn't know what to do.
There's good news on the other side of this break because God was more than willing to reach back when John reached out to him. And we're going to invite Art into the story as well and bring back Steve Johnson to talk a little bit about the video resources and the material that's available as we hear more of John Turnipseed's life. We invite you to stay tuned. You'd like to join in the conversation. You may have a family member that's involved in violence or gang activity, whatever it might be, just still want to get some advice. You're welcome to give us a call today. Talk to John at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. More with John Turnipseed and his story, and we'll talk about second chance and a turnaround here in just a moment. Stay tuned to Connecting Faith. hearing the story of transformation. We've heard kind of the chain reaction of poverty, violence, addiction, and despair that nearly destroyed three generations. But at one point, John Turnipseed realized that there was some help and some hope, and we're going to find out how he pursued that, and want to bring in Artix into the conversation as well. But John, let's just sort of pick up the story. You said it was about you're about 40 years old. You had a long, hard life by then.
Yeah, I was about 40 years old, and I was getting tired of my life and wanted some help, but didn't feel worthy of getting the help. And it just didn't. So I just kept on doing my thing, and I was unfortunate or fortunate enough that a number of things happened in a very short period of time. My son had gotten shot, got his leg shot off, and was just almost executed by a rival gang of our that hated my family and hated him particularly. And I was arrested for 50 felonies, and just a lot of things were going wrong. And I heard about the Fathering Center through a friend of mine that I'd been in prison with, you know, and it was a guy that I liked, and he asked me how my kids were doing, and I just lost it. They were doing so miserable, my sons especially. And then he told me Art was running it, and I immediately, Art is a one-name guy, you know, you can say Art, and everybody knows you're talking about Art Erickson. And Art was running it, so I knew that it was faith-based. I could, all the old tapes about Art came in, and now they were appealing to me as opposed to not being appealing, because I was done. I was up against the wall. I thought I was going back to prison for the rest of my life, and it wasn't to save me from going to prison or not. It was to save me from how I was feeling. And I'd accepted, in theory, God, but didn't know what the heck that meant. And so fortunately, Art never left. See, I would have been in trouble, really, if I would have had to try to find somebody to talk to. But fortunately, he was in that same area, you know, still doing the same thing that he was doing 30 years before that, 25, 30 years before that. And I ran upon him and already had a history with him, so that it's sort of like I could start a 20-year relationship with him that day, as opposed to trying to him learning who I was. And I knew he had something I wanted, and I wanted to learn how to get close to Jesus. That's all I wanted, because I was lost. I was scared. I didn't know. First time in my life, I was at a loss in my adult life for what to do. But I knew that Jesus was the answer, but I just didn't know how to do it.
Like an Art, wouldn't you feel a little bit like, was it, getting the vision from the Lord, say, well, there's a guy named Saul that you need to go over and see. And, were you concerned about, making contact with John Turnipseed, knowing you've seen him wreck the neighborhood for 20 years?
Well, it what's interesting is I have a young life DNA, and that means you stay in your neighborhood and you reach out to unreached people. And so we made a lot of contacts with a lot of people over a lot of period of time. And what was happening was the families were deteriorating, and father absence was a huge problem. McKnight Foundation did a study, and in 1994, they said 80% of the families in the houses in the neighborhood don't have a father in the home. Well, this produces all kinds of problems. And so John was one of many, really. And you're out there. And he didn't ever come to our stuff. And so we're still there. There's an irony here in a minute. He'd never come to Soul Lib. But when he did come into the Fathering Center, it was a matter of connecting now. And how do we connect? And what do you need? And what do we need to do for you? And so that was what we did. And so we processed that, put it together.
Talk about, was there a point where you you said, you know, I'm done with the old, I want the new? And, you know, talk a little bit about that day or that season or where, how that happened.
Well, I already knew who Art was, so I was pretty free to talk to him about what was going on. And I do remember the message I left that from that first day, that he told me that success will lead you away from God. Failure will lead you to God. And I was at that failure point, and but he warned me about when I became successful in life. I took that away from my very first meeting, and that we are all sinners. And that took a great weight off of me. He told me that we were all sinners because some way in my thinking, I'm thinking, well, you know, guys like Art don't sin. You know, everybody, you know, he's like this angel guy and stuff. And he told me that we were all sinners, and that sort of put us on an equal, made me believe that Jesus put us all on an equal playing field. And so I could walk away from that meeting feeling like, yeah, I'm good too. Art is good. I'm good. That helped a lot because I was very depressed.
To, I guess, just have come through Easter, and perhaps it means, you know, more to you every year. I don't know. But just to think about it, at one point you said, this is, you know, Jesus' death for me is what I need. I mean, talk a little about that, maybe that transformation for you.
Well, unfortunately, the seed was planted a long time ago with my grandmother and down in Alabama that, you know, God and how good he was. And then even though I wouldn't entertain it, it was all in our neighborhood. The Soul Live festivals, I get a headache waking up to that music because I lived a couple of blocks away. And I'd come and stand on the outskirts, but I never would come in. So I always knew that there was these God things going on in the neighborhood. So I think all of it had an effect on me and kept me linked to my core belief that I had some stuff way down inside. And so that I didn't have to search for where Jesus was doing his work. I knew where it was at. And me and a number of friends of mine have actually went through that same thing. When they decided to change their life, we knew where we could get help. And that was at through Urban Ventures, Park Avenue Church. And that happens to this still to this day.
Art, you, I'm sure those statistics were maybe not surprising to you, as you say, the study about 80% of the homes without fathers. I mean, you saw the devastation of that in a community where you have invested your life in.
Right. And, you know, it's interesting to try to unpack this thing. Because we have the parable of the lost son, don't we? And he decided to pick his stuff up and go. Said, I'm going, Dad. And he got out there, and he was in the pigsty. If it's a woman, she's on the streets. They're high. They're at the bottom. And they say, I want to go home. So they go home because they have a home. Now, isn't that interesting? That Jesus was telling an intact family story. But if you unpack that a different way, if I don't have a home and if I don't have a dad to go back to, where do I go? I just have to leave that sit there. I have to leave it sit there because we've created a prison system that has 2.4 million people in it. And if I can't make it out here or I'm at the bottom, I go back to my home, which is the prison system. And so this is a very difficult world to live in because I've been captive. I know what captivity is. Now I come out, and there's the hidden captivities. I can't work. I can't rent. I can't buy. I can't vote. I can't do anything. And nobody knows this. So I live where I can, take advantage of somebody. They say, get a job. Yeah, I'm trying. Get a job. Yeah, I'm trying. Get a job. Boom. He's back in prison. She's over at the Harriet Tubman Center for Battered Women. And this is a real world of so many people. So how do you reach out to people who are in this situation? And what they really need, what they're really looking for, they're looking for somebody to say, like, the Father did to Jesus, this is my son in whom I am well pleased. And you're just looking for that. You're just wanting that. You're wishing you had somebody say that. Isn't that interesting? So if you're going to work in this world of father absent people, and by the way, father absence is not down in the streets only. It's at the corporate headquarters. It's in the family, the pastor's home. It's in everywhere. We have father absence situations, right?
Yeah.
So we were looking for someone who would say, you know, I'm pleased with you. You're okay. And they take that self-esteem bucket, which is empty, is totally empty, and they begin to put some things in there, build the self-esteem bucket up. So people out there that are father absence are looking for adders, and they're looking for multipliers. And they usually just find subtractors and dividers. That's what it's all about out there.
Yeah.
So the ministry of adding and multiplying, of affirming, putting in the self-esteem bucket, and helping people in any way you can to begin to put their lives back together, including having them in your home for a while, because they don't have a place, so they need a place. And then they just see a little bit of what structure is like that's healthy. And so those are important aspects, I think, as we try to address this for all of us out there in Christian background.
John, talk about your, as you got to know Art, got reconnected with your faith, the church, the Fathering Center, you're now director of the Fathering Center. Obviously, it was part of meeting the need in your life, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I became a director of Fathering Center not because I needed a job. I had a job. I had a very good job and had a couple of job offers. When I decided to, you know, after a talk with Art, to come to the Fathering Center because that I knew a whole lot about being unfathered. I knew a whole lot about the pain that men would go through, and I had become the first client of the Fathering Center. Through accidentally being put into a group of men that they were training to be facilitators. I don't think it was accidental now because God does his thing, but all of a sudden I'm in this group of very good men, very good fathers, and they're going to be teaching other fathers, and I got that training also. And I was really a client, and just staying around the Fathering Center, I figured out that that was what I was supposed to do now. That gave me something to do because I had a large hole in my heart about the damage that I had caused in my own kids' children's lives. And I knew that I could talk to other men about the father, being a good father to your kids and a relationship with the Father Jesus. You know, that is what I live for now.
Talk about issues like forgiveness to give it and to receive it. I mean, you've got a lot of damaged relationships along the way.
Got a lot of damaged relationships. I did a lot of damage to people, and the way, the bigness of Jesus and how he forgave, you know, I was just watching a movie, The Passion of the Christ. I watched it the other night, and just I'm looking at him saying, how could he forgive? You know, but that's Jesus. That's how big he is. And I don't have to be as big as Jesus, but the concept of forgiveness I got from how he forgave me and how I felt when I knew Jesus had forgave me, how I felt is the way now I can forgive other people, you know, and how I talk about forgiveness. Jesus gave a great example, and it was huge. He forgave the whole world. And so that makes it easier for me to talk to people about forgiveness, because a lot of my men that come to the Fathering Center, that's the shame of the things they've done, and they need forgiveness and someone to understand that.
Or is that something that you really have to work through? I mean, at the center, just to...
Absolutely. And I think that one of the things that's important about forgiveness is that God does not take the memory of what we did away from us. If he took the memory away, we'd forget it and we'd do it all over again. So he doesn't take the memory. He leaves the memory, but he takes the sting. He takes the sting away. So I don't have that overpowering shame, that guilt and all. He takes that away. He's the memory so that I don't do that and I can help other people. But he really does forgive. And that, to me, is taking that stuff away.
We're talking about forgiveness and hope, and the Center for Fathering. It's part of Urban Ventures in the Minneapolis Art Erickson is the founder of Urban Ventures. John Turner, the director of the Fathering Center there. Steve Johnson also with us from Five Stone Media and has recounted John's story in the film. We're going to talk a little bit about the book and the video curriculum, the short films. We're going to play a couple of clips, in fact, as well. We'll get to that in just a moment as we hear more on Connecting Faith.
It's encouragement and hope for your daily journey.
It makes a difference in my life in that it's so encouraging and inspiring. During my drive time, I appreciate it too, and in my errands that I'm running and things that I'm doing. It's a real blessing because it's encouraging and inspiring throughout the entire day, each day.
Connecting your faith to your life every day. Thanks for growing with us on Faith Radio.
Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Just a quick word to say thank you again for your generosity in supporting Faith Radio. It's been an amazing year seeing the network grow in listeners and grow in support, and we believe grow in the impact that it's having in changing lives. And you've been there through it all. I want to just honor you and thank you for your partnership in keeping this ministry going strong. And we ask that God would richly bless you in the months and years to come.
Give me Jesus.
We're 48 past the hour and spending a little time today hearing John Turnipseed's story. He is a former gang leader, a pimp, drug dealer. His life is one of violence, in fact, a downward spiral that's affected many in his family and many across the the region, perhaps. But the good news is that as God has done a work of transformation in his life, he now leads the Fathering Center team at Urban Ventures. It's a program that has reached over 600 men and 200 women a year, and it's about faith, hope, and forgiveness, backed up by mentoring and role models. And John, I know you have the opportunity to speak. We're going to talk in a moment about some of the videos and bring Steve back in, but I'm curious, when you have an opportunity to speak to maybe other gang members, those in prison, I know you do speak when you have the opportunity, what message resonates with them, or what do you want to make sure that you tell them?
You know, I talk to young guys and men about the reality of being a real man, you know, and dealing with, you know, their inner feelings of being a father and what that means, and being a man in the community, and they really don't have a concept of Jesus and who he is. And I tell him who he is in my life. You know, Jesus is the biggest, baddest gangster I've ever encountered in my whole life. You know, he makes all the so-called gangsters and stuff, they just bow in comparison to his greatness and stuff. And there was, you know, Jesus didn't even tell jokes. You know, he came here, did what he was supposed to do, stood up as a man, honored his mother and his father, and did exactly what he wants us to do. He modeled his force, you know. And just letting them know that gangs are here just to suck the lifeblood out of who you are and your legacy. Gangs are created, you know, to take the weakness in you and make it into a nasty, ugly force in the lives of other people. And it will take from you everything that God has given to you, and that you have no reason to be afraid of gangs. They live off fear. And gang members actually should basically, if they love you like they say they do, they should be willing to let you go. And you need to go to whoever your gang leader is and say, can I go? Do you respect and love me enough to let me go free and live the life that I want to live? And that's the message I send to guys that I talk to.
John's story is coming out in a book here this fall called Lifeblood, and it's in process right now. But there are already some video trilogy of short films completed. Steve Johnson from Five Stone Media. Steve, I know that the third one is just getting finished, but talk a little bit about them. And I know we got a couple of clips, so let's talk about those.
And before we touch on the films, I want to be sure to mention something that John is developing with us. We call it a Lifeblood video curriculum, and it's nine steps to transformation in your life. And it's for at-risk people. It's for guys in prison. But we're finding it's for more than just that too, and that's just in the finishing stages right now. So it's family influence, hope, power, self-reliance, second chances, loyalty, doing the right thing, and then transformation. So John is the host, and there's been 9 other guys like John that have served time in prison that have been brought to us that tell their story, and you know, so we're really excited about it. It's 3 hours of content, you know. Yeah. We started with the films. We started with one short film 6 years ago. Erwin McManus, who is the author of Artisan Soul, that just came out, is a friend of a couple of the Five Stone guys. And he's a pastor in L.A., and he's got some very creative people in his church that offered to help us with these films. And so the first one was just called Turnip Seed because we couldn't think of a better name for it. And it's really about John's relationship with his father. And we kind of left it open-ended with John asking the question, you know, or saying, please, God, make it stop, is how we left it. The second film is called Second Chance, and it's really, that's where the mentoring aspect, that's where the Art Erickson character was brought in. And so I think we have a minute and a half trailer about that.
Okay, let's hear that right now.
So what's it like being king? Kind of help you get in here, boys, the kind you get for yourself. We're all on our own in here. That's it. That's it.
Forward to hearing more of that. That's from Second Chance, right?
Yep. And the actor who portrays John, his name is Lawrence Gilliard Jr., and he is now a principal on a very popular network TV series, and we've been just thrilled that he's been in all 3 of ours, and he and John have developed a great relationship. The third film is called Legacy, and we have just a clip. This is the kind of the worldwide audio premiere right here.
All right.
And it's just a short clip, but it's kind of in John's words, how the film is set up.
I was once feared in my city. Feared because I wore the family name owned by generations of pimps, drug pushers, and murderers. Accused of 50 felonies, convicted of 10. Prison, paroles, and probations defined my life. And I did it all for my family. Someone once said, it's hard to clean the floor of a house that has no roof. Well, one day, a man took the time to show me how to build a roof over my head. And once that happened, I was able to leave the outside for good.
Looking forward to hearing and seeing more of that. So. John, just maybe in a minute or so, just legacy is something I know you think a lot about, but what's your challenge to maybe someone who's heading down a path that's, you know, of violence or drugs or whatever? I mean, talk about legacy, why that's so important.
You know, life has a definite start and an end moment. And in that period of time, you have the power to make a decision about how that period will be played out over and over and over again in the life of your family. And family is of the utmost importance. And the grandkids that you will never see will taste your legacy. So why not leave a good one? And Jesus Christ is the good one. And mentorship is one of the vehicles that we have to use because of the father absence. It's a big time necessity.
Good word. Steve, we've got turnipseedfilm.com, right, is a good place to connect, right?
Yep. So. That, 2 of the short films would be available there. Okay. Third one will be. But turnipseedfilm.com, if you wanted to get in touch with John for whatever reason, we can arrange that as well.
Okay. And, Art, we should mention, too, that for those in the Twin Cities area, you know, Urban Ventures, the director will be at the Minnesota Prayer Breakfast, right?
Yes. Tim Clark is the new CEO, 2.5 years. You have people like Peggy Fink, who used to be here at Northwestern,
sure.
And Mark Peter Lundquist, who used to be a student here, we have a number of people that we connect with. But at the prayer breakfast, May 13th, 7 o'clock at the downtown Hilton Hotel, there will be the breakfast and then a seminar following the breakfast on Father Absence. And Tim Clark will be wrapping that up, and you'll get a chance to meet him.
Father Absence is a crucial issue. In that, I mean, the cities aren't going to transform unless we get a handle on this.
Absolutely.
John, thank you for sharing your story. Blessings to you. Art, good to see you again. Thank you for your good work and your faithfulness in community, having that neighborhood DNA for a lot of years, right? And Steve? Thanks for the good work that you and your friends are at Five Stone Media for putting this together and capturing his story, because it's a powerful story. So.
It's been transforming for us.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah, being a part of that seemed amazing. All right, so check out. You want to find out more, you can go to turnipseedfilm.com, and you can find out more about the films and look for the video curriculum will be, is that going to be available on that site as well?
Yes.
Will be.
This summer.
Yeah.
This summer will be.
Yeah. Okay. Look for that. And then John's story, Lifeblood, the book coming out here probably this fall. So we'll have you back and give an update on that. John, great. Blessings to you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Listening to Connecting Faith. If you missed part of today's program or would like to share it with a friend, we'd certainly recommend that. You can always go to our website at myfaithradio.com. It's myfaithradio.com. And then click on the Connecting Faith show page there, and you'll find the podcasts of this and other shows, and pass it on to a friend or listen to it again. And invite you back tomorrow. We're going to talk with Cynthia Tobias tomorrow. We're going to talk a little bit about learning styles, a bit about education, and some key lessons there that we'll want to get into. And we'll see you tomorrow here on Connecting Faith.